Okay, so how do you want to do this? I think we should start with positives from the first two games first and then go into the negatives. Because I think
I'm going to start it with I found the NHL 12 soundtrack playlist on Spotify. So,
really?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, wow. So. How wide is it? On a scale of
This
is America to Vanilla Ice.
It is a 38-year-old white male from 1997 who liked the band Live.
Live.
This playlist.
Live is good.
It's great. I mean, like, it's very
white.
It's very early PlayStation's video game soundtrack.
Not that bad.
No, I mean
that's
it's
hockey also.
It's
but that's
just very. It's very narrow. It's not for everybody, and it's definitely more nostalgic than anything.
Do you like 90s rock? Did you once think of buying an album?
Like,
did
like
you think
16
of once buying
Stone
an album?
By Bush is great. Like,
yes, I have
fantastic.
That. I have that. I have that stuff on my
That's
iPod.
That's my perfect hockey warm-up music right there, that album. Just put it on for the 20 minutes before the game.
Playing Everything Zen on repeat until your brain explodes, basically?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, I don't care too much about that. Like that's NHL 12. I wonder what the NHL 18, 19 soundtracks. 19 now. I wonder what it sounds like. I don't know.
Mumble rap.
Not just mumble rap.
It's probably Fall Out Boy, Panic at the Disco, two of the most overrated, terrible bands. I heard someone on the subway say that Fall Out Boy saved rock and roll once.
What did they save?
I that's the first thing that popped up in my head. I was just like,
you know,
I'm just
you know I have
not
family members
to
going tonight to a Maroon 5 concert.
I would rather go to a Maroon 5 concert than like a Panic at the Disco or Fall
Out
Boy.
I'll reverse that. I'm not a Panic at the Disco fan or a Fall Out Boy fan, but Maroon 5's barely music anymore. It's just I think Adam Levine is equivalent.
Adam Levine
to
is good to look at, so I'll go for him. And I like their first album. There's something about Jane. I mean, I think people who
know, you
know me
how
in my
many
childhood
years that
know that I bought at least two copies of that physically. And I listen to it all the time. Sunday morning.
How that album was.
Sunday
That's a
morning.
Billion years ago. They don't make any good music now. The thing is, I'm
worried. But if they play
now,
one song off that album, it'd be worth the ticket.
If, well, they're not going, they're not paying any money. They're going for free. but I will say this. I worry that Adam Levine is now is like a Chuck E. Cheese animatronic. He just comes in, plays songs, and goes home with no emotion and anything.
I mean, I think once you reach a certain – I don't know if it's a certain level of fame, power, or money. I think you just stop growing. You just stop – you just become an automated, repetitive what you are at that moment. Because
for the rest
it's
of
just,
maybe
it's
that's
the
true.
Money maker. It's the golden goose. So many people rely on you, blah, blah, blah. Get in, play the hits, get out.
Maybe that's true. That could be true. But anyway, I don't know. Oh, we also have to talk about Gritty, because Gritty happened while we were there. Yeah, we need
fantastic.
To talk about
fantastic. Did you see the head – I think he's the owner or the head brewer or at Evil Genius Brewery. Got a Gritty tattoo with the name Gritty under it in cocaine.
Oh. yeah.
That's fantastic.
That he was like a fever dream when he showed up.
It was exactly what Philadelphia needed with the Eagles going off to a bad start, Philadelphia Phillies just bombing after the All-Star break.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
Right, no, but
things.
Like, you know, it was completely needed when
see,
like, you know.
See, here's the thing. Gritty
struck
a lot of
tension
Philly.
And...
Well, I'm going to compare it to the Union's new mascot, which I only care about the Union. Anyway, I've done some work with the Union before. So they created a mascot called Fang. You have to look it up. It's some dinosaur snake thing.
Fang's great.
He's weird. He's weird. But did you ever think that somebody who looked like Harry Knowles from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe would actually be the NHL's most popular mascot? Because that's what he looks like.
If he came from Philadelphia and if he acted like a Philadelphia fan, yes. And he does both of those things.
He kind
of
does. Well, he's kind of like the Philly Fanatic's orange bastardized cousin. And everyone loves the Philly Fanatic.
Well, he's the Philly Fanatic on three beers.
It kind of seems like that, and it makes sense for the Flyers. I was like, well, I first
at
thought
the
was,
barbecue
the Flyers
playing
do?
With his nephews. I mean, that's what the that's what Gritty is.
He says,
on three beers right before the wiffle ball game, playing with the nephews.
And he calls Angelo Cataldi all the time, asking about why the Eagles can't throw the ball with Carson Wentz.
His first night, he tweeted at the Penguins mascot to sleep with one eye open bird.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Like, you know, like, it's just that type of stuff.
You know,
like,
what's weird? The Flyers are likable now. That's really not good. I don't like that. I don't like that the Flyers are likable.
Well, don't worry. Dave Hackstall has a plan.
I watched a little bit of the game on Tuesday.
Andy McDonald is playing at 75%, and it is atrocious.
Well, is it any worse than Matheson and Pesek looked last night?
Yes.
Okay, just check.
Just because Matheson and Pesek, they have moments where it's like, oh yeah, they're NHL defensemen.
Am I surprised that Jacob McDonald has been the best looking Panthers defenseman for the first two games?
After he's been the best Panthers defenseman for the past 2 weeks, it stopped being surprising. But okay. I mean, the fact that it's two games into the season and he's still the Panthers' best defenseman.
Well, I think Ekblad played better last night.
He was the only goal scorer for a game.
Well, that was Andrei Vasilevskiy. Vasilevskiy was crazy good in that
game. Was competent NHL goaltending, the likes of which you won't see for 2 to 4 weeks in Florida.
The likes of which that you haven't seen around the NHL yet this year. Nobody's had any competent goaltending yet. It's kind of funny.
Well, I mean, I always like to say, well, there's goalies who are just bad, and then there's veteran goalies who take a while to get into it. Luongo's usually like this.
So where does Cam Ward fall in? Because I've watched a couple.
He's just bad.
I just watched a couple of those Blackhawks games.
Yeah, I think Cam Ward and James Reimer fall into they're just bad.
Yes. Well, I think we could get into the two games. We'll start with positives because yeah.
I think let's start with the disclaimer that both of us are happy with how things have shaken out, because the only things I complain about are the things I knew going into the season
were going to be problems.
An issue. So
yeah, there's nothing new in terms of problems. I think for me, the biggest takeaway, I'll say this before we start. Did you notice how in the first two games the Panthers had a period where they decided that, you know what, the other team's not going to do anything, and then they did it?
Right.
Like,
and
for the first two games, I've never seen the Panthers. They fluked their way to periods like that before, but they had in two consecutive games against not bad hockey teams a period where they just said, you're not going to do anything, and then the other team didn't do anything. Like, I've never seen the Panthers do that before.
So it always comes either in the second or third period. So it always comes after.
It was the first game. It was the first period where they completely dominated, and then they had a not great.
Right, that was one of the first good starts in a long time.
Yeah, and then the second period against the Blue Jackets, I watched the bits and pieces of the game because I was calling a game last night, so I was tracking what was going on, and I was looking at all the like the track or what, and I looked at Natural Stat Trick, and then the line went spiked up, and I was like, Jesus.
And it's not that, you know, they switch lines, they change their strategy, they run a different forecheck or a different power play unit or something like that.
Well,
it's literally just the execution of the players. So I don't know if it's Bugner saying something, if it's McFarland, if it's Capuano, if it's Barkov, any of the other guys wearing letters, if it's the guy, if it's McKenzie. I don't know who it is or what's happening, but for some reason they can turn it on for 20 minutes, whenever they need
to. Now the question is, can they turn it on for 40 or 60? But the fact that they could turn it on for 20 and destroy any team in the league for 20 minutes is a sign.
And let's be honest, it's really just Barkov's line and a handful of other players.
At the moment, it's just Barkov's line. But
who can dominate a period. And if you could get more guys to do it, that's how you turn it into 60 minutes.
Well, we'll talk about the second line because it's not quite there yet. We'll talk about defense pairings and goaltending, and we'll spend some time on special teams, and we'll go through other stuff too because we want to make predictions. All this stuff. Let's record this. We have the problem of talking about all this stuff.
Oh, this has all been recorded, my friend. We are 5 minutes into this podcast.
Oh, that's terrible. This is going to sound funny. We didn't even do an intro.
It's the best intro.
Intro where there wasn't actually an intro. It's like we're listening to Merrick versus Wyszynski again.
Don't worry, I'll throw in some NHL 12 soundtrack.
Ah!
They'll fade out, we'll start talking.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so let's actually talk about hockey now in more of a formal sense, because the Why Hockey Podcast is back after a slight schedule-induced break.
There were 11 forwards on the ice last night in spots that I wanted them to be in.
And who was the 12th?
And it was the Troy Brouwer. But okay. He played passable. And again, it's two games. There are some people on Twitter who said Troy Brouwer has looked, quote-unquote, really good. And it's pump the fucking brakes.
Seriously. I would dispute.
He's been NHL adequate. The fact that you're thinking Troy Brouwer has looked really good to great is how bad Haley, McKenzie, and even Sevier are at times. And
Certainly the first two.
Sevier is still borderline NHL fourth liner. That's how bad the Florida Panthers
bottom fans, six last year.
Like, perspective, it has been moved to the right or left or whatever you want to, down or up, whatever direction you want to consider it. But
we'll go with so down. Skewed. Okay, so let's start with positives from the first two games because we're recording this on Friday after
Best Columbus. Forward group they've ever iced in Florida history, period.
Certainly seems like it. Certainly seems like it.
I don't think that there is a contender. I mean, I would say dollar for dollar, Barkov is equal to Pavel Bure when Pavel Bure was a Panther in terms of...
No doubt about that.
And then everything else around it is way better. And there's never been a better floor. The team that went to the Stanley Cup would get run over night in and night out by this Florida Panthers team on the worst night. Like, it's that much better just with the offense. In the regular season, this offense, like Bob Bugner said, this offense should be able to score four goals every night, every other game, the rest of the season. And I know there's been a ton of goals in the opening of this week and a half, but that's just the looseness of the first couple weeks of hockey. When things get settled and teams start, you know, playing tighter and the playoff teams really start playing like playoff teams because they don't have to worry about October like the, you know, the peasants like the Panthers.
Yes.
You know, it's...
Pretty much.
It's going to get a lot tighter, and they should be able to win a lot of games just on the fact that they're going to have four actual lines once they get healthy and McKenzie's gone. Can we talk about that? Bugner refuses to give any update to Haley. Haley was not, I don't think, was involved in the pre-game thing. I think they announced everyone but Haley, or they didn't show Haley or something like that.
I didn't see that, so I
cannot... I didn't either, but I saw a lot of people talking about it on Twitter. But whatever, they're still... And then Bugner said he'll answer Haley in a couple days. I think optimally, you are expecting this by the end of this year for both Troy Brouwer and Colton Sevier to be sharing the 12th forward spot, or both being the two extra forwards. I mean, Juho Lamikko has stepped in and has already proven that he's better than anyone else on that fourth line.
This is true. And then I did see somebody saying last night, it's a surprise that the fourth line looks as good as it does where there's, well, not Haley and McKenzie on it. I mean, Lamikko was probably the most standout forward in the preseason. Now, I watched two games, the only two that were televised, but Lamikko definitely looked pretty good. And I was wondering, like, is he actually going to be the fourth line center? And he ended up being the fourth line center, and he looked decent last night. And if you're talking about a team that goes into the postseason, if they get there with Barkov, Trocheck, McCann, and Lamikko as your four centers, I mean, we're not talking best team in the league, but we're talking that's good enough to win a series.
I have a feeling, and I know that I'm going to get some people who don't like this, because I know there's a lot of McCann fans out there. But I have a feeling that McCann might not end up at 3C by the end of this year. I like him. I think he has a lot of value to this team. I just don't know if it's at the 3C spot, and I don't think that's the best use of the 3C spot, potentially.
It's possible. We have to watch it.
I really like him. I really like him as a three left wing or a fourth line center, a guy who, kind of like Scott Laughton of the Flyers, can play really good on the fourth line or jump up and be pretty average offensively but good defensively on the third line.
He's an important player, and I think he's been okay the first two games. Let's start with positives, even though they've lost the first two
games.
He
wins the Gudbranson trade, I'll tell you that.
He does win the Gudbranson trade. Boy, oh boy, isn't that funny. So let's.
That's fine. Steve Weir's signings really, Yandle and Reimer really excelled last night. So
They did really excel last night, but let's talk about some positives first and foremost. I think overall for the first two games, team-wise, they've looked pretty good. There have been individual lapses, obviously, but I think the team game, there haven't been huge structural faults with the team. And when they've needed to respond and have the good shifts and have the dominating shifts, they've done that. The team game's been pretty good, even though they haven't won the first two games. I think that's something that we've seen issues with in the past. There aren't the same sort of structural issues we saw last year, obviously.
No, I would disagree with that. I think their flow is good. They have a good flow and they have good chemistry playing together, and they're executing the systems. But I think that these aren't really going to be the systems they need to play at, and it's really holding them back more so. I mean, offensively it helps them, but they give up so much defensively because they're waiting until they have the puck to be aggressive. They're very passive without the puck. There's so much gaps from the back end of the neutral zone over the blue line, and they talk about wanting to cut down the time they spend in their D zone, and the only thing they talk about, Capuano on the Goldstein podcast talked about this, Bugner has said this, is when they get the puck, they want to go right up, more north-south, right up the boards to the winger, and get out of the zone. That's one, really easy to read and jump and react to in a game. And two, I think you're waiting too long if you're waiting till after you get the puck. They need to be way more aggressive and stop doing the put everyone back into the home plate area and collapse and then push back out.
We saw a little bit. There were a couple of shifts in the third period where you saw they couldn't get the puck up the boards and out, and they had to try again and again, and it led to a long shift. So that's a problem. But as I said, I think it's first two games, and also the defense has had a bad two games. So,
well, it's the same defense. I mean, that's
it is the same defense with
the players are playing fine, and that's why I'm optimistic about the season. But I would say that that their fluidity and them just having good legs and being ready for games and stuff at the moment is kind of covering a lot of system flaws that will, you know, as the season goes on, if they don't make changes, may potentially start to creep up.
Okay, let's go for more positives firstly.
I can't invent positives if they're not there, though. There were some positives. The positives are they have a really good forward group. The positives are they've only played two games, so there's not much to really harp on.
Well,
but
we'll
it's still a lot of turnovers. It's still terrible goaltending. I mean, James Reimer can't find an angle if it was put in front of him.
He had a very bad game yesterday. He had a really bad game.
And, like, it's great that the Barkov line was good. It's
okay.
great
Can
that
we
the
talk
second
about,
line was
they're
on
getting
the ice.
There. They're getting there. The second line's not there yet. Can we talk about Barkov and Dubstad and Dadonov for a second, just in terms of talking about positives? I don't think their possession's there yet, but in the first two games, when they decided they wanted to take over, they took over. I mean, it didn't lead to goals against Tampa, but they scored three goals against the Blue Jackets, and there were a couple of moments where it's like they're toying with the opposition. We've reached a statement in Florida Panthers history where the Panthers have a line that has decided that it can toy with whoever it wants, and that's still kind of fun. And that's why they didn't break up that line, because you saw the chemistry instantly from their first couple of shifts against the Lightning. They just came out and said, all right, dear, we're going to do what we did at the end of last season and against the Blue Jackets. I mean, it was just silly what they were doing to them. It was actually kind of funny to watch, because when they decided, when Barkov led that 2-on-1 for Dadonov, you're like, okay, this is going in the back of the net. And then when Barkov scored at the other end, it's like, you know, this is going in the back of the net. Like, when's the last time we've ever said that about any Panthers forward group that didn't include Pavel Bure, that they could have a line where it's like, you know, it's going in the back of the net after a certain series of things happens?
There wasn't. I mean,
it's crazy.
There's
how
some people who go to 2012 and that, like, Weiss for Stieg line, which I just, okay, yeah. I mean, like, you wouldn't count on it. You would hope, and sometimes it would happen. But it wasn't like you would say goal as soon as Barkov crosses the blue line with the puck.
Like, you saw that with the first goal with Dadonov when he broke in with a 2-on-1. Just by driving forward, you're like, okay, this is in the back of the net. It's over. And then the second period where a similar thing happened, you're like, it's over. Same thing just happened. It's crazy, that line. I think the second line's not there yet. I think it takes time to develop a little bit of that chemistry. And they're clearly not entirely where they want to be. They don't understand each other in the same way. And it's that three-person chemistry. I know we talk about lines being made in pairs. And in theory, with Trocheck and Huberto having the understanding that they do, it should be better. It's not quite there yet, but I'm not worried about that line. Trocheck's had a pretty energetic first couple of games. They set up the first goal. Hoffman's not there yet. I'm not surprised he's not there yet. It's going to take some time. But that line, when it gets to where we think it could be...
line's not going to be the line. It's just not going to work. And the same reason one line, the first line works, and the same reason I was advocating for Bjugstad as a first line winger with Barkov for years is because it just works. You could take Dadonov, put him on the second line, put Huberto up there, and that line would be exactly the same, function exactly the same. Huberto and Dadonov are both pass and shoot threats who are just really good playing give and go with Barkov. So you can drop them in and out. Bjugstad is the third guy on that line. He doesn't need the pucks, but he doesn't need to be holding the puck. But he can dig pucks out. He can move pucks. He can get in people's way, create space.
He's also huge. So when you get him in that home plate area, he just the size kills people. Because right. They don't know how to deal with that focus on the other two.
If you look at the second line, you have Huberto, which, you know, he's the guy who's doing all the defensive work for that line. I mean, last night he saved their bacon a bunch because Hoffman and Trocheck were just out to lunch, ripping shots around the boards to each other. And Huberto was the guy going, getting the pucks back for them, going, you know, skating from the blue line to the goal line back and forth sometimes. And that works. But then you have Trocheck and Hoffman, who on the power play and at 5-on-5 have both been fighting each other for the puck at the same time, for the shots in the same positions and things like that. They both want to do the same thing at the same time, and they both need volume. Trocheck's a volume guy. I mean, that's why you put up with how many times he makes a stupid shot 3 seconds into a 2-on-1 or something right over the blue line that goes high and wide, like Jeff Carter. I mean, like, you just deal with it because he needs that volume. You can't have two volume guys on the same line because there's not enough volume to go around unless it's the first line playing a bunch of minutes. Well, it's not.
Well, last night, actually, when I look at the lines, this is at 5-on-5. Barkov played, 15 minutes 5-on-5? Trocheck played basically the same amount 5-on-5. Now, right. In terms of just pure puck possession, the second line had a better night. But I think that line is also going to take a little bit of chemistry to build, and it's eventually going to figure itself out.
Right, but you
they're good enough players
that by puck possession, Mike Hoffman and Vincent Trocheck on a 2-on-1 taking a step over the blue line, ripping a shot high and wide that wraps down as
a
breakaway for the other team. That's a positive puck possession wise.
Yeah.
So, but that's a negative in reality puck possession wise because you just broke the you turned an odd man rush into a breakout for the other team going the other way.
This is true, but as I said, I think that line's going to figure it out at some point. And
What I'm saying is I don't think because they don't fit together. You got to move things around, and that's why I was saying experiment in the preseason. They did not do that, did they? They didn't. There was no experimentation. So what did they do today? They dropped Hoffman down to the third line. They moved Malgin up. I actually like that move. I was telling people, calm down. That was a good move by Bugner. You took Mike Hoffman, who needs to find his spot. Put him on the third line where he can run the third line, drive the third line, take all the shots of the third line. In practice, maybe in a game, maybe in two games, that's fine. Malgin looked amazing last night. He was really good. He should have
scored really
twice.
Good the first two games.
I called him an idiot twice because he couldn't lift the puck when he needed to and could have won the game. But, you know, he's looking really good and he deserves that promotion. And when players see that, Malgin had a good game, moved up, Hoffman's not working, he's going to move down and get a different opportunity. They should be doing that with Yandel. Instead, they changed the power play one unit, put Yandel back up there. Why are they saying that Yandel's better than five forwards at offense and defense after the way he's been playing? He's just not. I mean, Barkov's better at both of those things. Put him in so it's if Bugner can do what he did with those forward lines today in practice, start moving D pairs around, start moving guys up that should move up, or guys who should move down, just to figure things out. He should have been doing it in the preseason, but if he doesn't now, I think by game 20, the team's going to look really good. The team's going to be very dangerous in all three zones, without the puck, with the puck.
Let's start by focusing.
There. Personnel's there, and they're playing well. Like, Yandle, I think, is playing well. He's just not really being put in a position and is trying
he's making
to do
a lot of mistakes.
Out of it.
He's making a lot of mistakes.
And like
he had
I
a bad
Pisick,
game.
I thought Pisick had like a lot of good little one-on-one moments and little things like that, but in the whole picture of things, I don't think he's put in an area to give his maximum contribution to the team.
I could agree with that because I thought Matheson had a pretty decent first game when that second pairing had a pretty not great game.
Right.
Like,
yeah, the problem
is
they just
I
like
see that.
Alternate nights on or alternate shifts on. They're never on the same page at the same time long enough to add value at the rate they need to for a second pair unit that gets pretty tough minutes.
I think that we've always talked about the fact that they need to change the pairs, and I think there's no better evidence than last night that the pairs have to change. But...
And if you listen to Capuano on the Goldstein podcast, which please never listen to that. Oh, my God. It's worse than listening to Goldstein in the intermission.
Oh, calm down. Goldie's fine.
He's a salesman. That's
well,
what he
obviously,
is.
He's a salesman. This is what happened if you saw my Twitter argument about sending Borgstrom.
Do you
want to
listen
to
a podcast of a car salesman ask banal questions to somebody who's not gonna, you know, who could offer more but is not?
I don't come in saying you should discount it completely. I'm saying you have to come in knowing what you're getting, and there's a difference there.
Anyway, but so Capuano basically was talking about the D pairings and the D usage, and he basically is saying two things. The two reasons they're not experimenting with the D pairs, even though they said they did, is they wanted to get off to a hot start, and they thought changing the D pairs at all, because they didn't change the D pairs at all last year, would make that happen.
And then the
second thing is also that Yandle and Ekblad like playing together, which I could give two shits about.
I don't care who likes playing with who.
Yeah, like they're playing.
They like winning more,
they're
don't
supposed
they?
To go play. How many times have really good players been terrible coaches? Like, it's not their job to coach and put the lines together.
Yeah, I think that for the sake of this argument, when your best defenseman has been Jacob McDonald for the first two games, and I thought Ekblad hasn't been bad, but Jacob McDonald's been probably the standout defenseman. It's a slight indictment of what's going on ahead of them. And that's credit to Jacob McDonald. The Panthers now have a ninth defenseman. And these are all good things.
The way he's playing, he's a sixth defenseman until six other D push him out.
At this point right now, like, I don't know what happens when Weegar and Kiselevich get healthy. You can't take McDonald out of the lineup.
No,
you
can't.
He's playing too well. And Petrovic has even played pretty decently. But this is
Petrovic has looked completely different from last year. This looks like the guy that his fans talk about. The guy who makes a great first outlet pass. The guy who, you know, doesn't hesitate with the puck, or, you know, he's always gonna kind of look slow or lackadaisical or sloth, like, you know, because, you know, Scott Niedermeyer had the same thing. Like, some people just look like they're not putting everything into
it. Not everybody's gonna look like Erik Karlsson
or Derek McKenzie. Like, some players look like they're putting more into it than they are. Some players look like they're less, and some people, you know, they are what they are.
Not every player is Phil Kessel, is what you're saying.
Yes.
But that pairing actually works. We've seen that. Like, it's funny because we like Kiselevich, we like that signing, and we like Mackenzie Weegar as a third pairing defenseman. But the Panthers right now have a surplus of good players to use in that position. And Jacob McDonald was one of those guys who had a good AHL season. They took a flyer on him. They thought he'd be one of the better defensemen in Springfield, and he's now actually played well enough that he's sticking. And that's fine. You want players like that. That
absolutely
succeed in those situations. And it also, again, when we talk about it from asset perspectives, it means the Panthers have more defensemen that they could, in theory, trade if they wanted to. And that's not a bad thing, because come later in the year, you know they're going to look for something to help out up front, probably. And having assets helps that. And I'm looking at his possession numbers according to Natural Stat Trick, which is the site I'm going to have to go to now, because Hockey Stats, which was my first site that I went to last year, is no longer exists.
Did anyone try HockeyDB yesterday for a couple hours? Because it was down, and I got really worried. I was like, who hired Hockey Database?
Oh, no. Because everybody got hired. We lost Rob Pullman to the Kings. It was very sad this summer. McDonald and Petrovich were both at, like, McDonald's course CRL was 8, and Petrovich's was nearly 11. They had a pretty good night. Again, they're not playing against tough competition, but they had a pretty good night, and you watched them play. And the team looked a little bit more fluid when they were out there, even when it was top line third pairing. It looked good. And again, I don't think it's a bad thing that right now Jacob McDonald has outplayed everybody in defense. And again, 2 games, so it's not like the Panthers have.
I think it's not a bad thing the way Jacob McDonald has played. I think it's a bad thing that other defensemen have played so bad that it's the best performance on the back end.
This is definitely a concern. But, now, the other thing I'm concerned about is...
I think Uyghur's lost his job. Not saying like he's going to get cut or traded or whatever, but I think that
he's lost his job.
If Uyghur comes back, he's in the press box. He has to play his way back in. He was not very good towards the end of last year. He was starting to like teeter off, which you kind of expected. And then he came into training camp, and I thought his training camp in preseason was rough. And the way McDonald has played, the way Melchiori has played, the way Kisilevich and Petrovic, it's just you'll try to work him in when you can and give him a shot, but he has to earn it over other defensemen.
And maybe if he goes down to Springfield, it could help him. Like that's like right, we could see that happening right now. And again, this is fine. You want competition for players.
We've been asking for it for years.
We're getting it. Well, it's also the Henrik Borgstrom thing.
And this is why you want a coach who's okay with, you know, experimenting with trying different pairs, with doing this stuff, because that's how you get the most mileage of minutes to everybody involved, is being able to have more rotational options.
He's not married to line combinations. Right. And I think that there's been more balance for the Panthers in terms of lines in the first two games than we saw last year, where it was first two lines and the other two were off in space. But, you know, we'll see. Like, I want to see Malgin play with Huberto and Trocheck. We saw that last year, and it actually looked pretty good. And Malgin's had good 2 games. I like Dennis Malgin a lot.
Yeah.
And he's one of those glue guys that you don't consider, like, how as important as he is. But he's looked – it's like him and McCann. And I don't think Vetrano's been that bad either. You know,
I think he's in the doghouse just with the numbers game, but I don't think he's
– I don't think he's played that badly. But, again, it's like, again, you have – 14 legitimate forwards that can play. There are some that are not going to play. And you also have a billion back-to-backs.
You have 14 legitimate forwards you can play. Some are in the AHL, some are in the NHL. And then you have three forwards you can't play who are sandwiched in between.
And you right now have what? Nine defensemen who can play? Something like that.
I would say that Yandel, Pisik, and at the moment Matheson can't play.
Well, they're playing very badly, but when they play as well as we know they can play...
Yandel and Pisik still wouldn't be on this team for me, with the way others have played. It's just...
This is obviously true, but again, we don't live in a world where this is reasonable and feasible. So, can we say...
You can get rid of Pisik pretty easily. I mean, Pisik's feasible.
Hello,
it's Yandel, I'm okay with. You just maybe move him to the second pair, and you can still play him with Barkov. I understand that. You want to get the most out of his performance. Barkov can cover for him defensively, especially if it's maybe Kisilevich and Yandel, second pair. That could be cool. Let's try that.
We'll see it. I think we will at some point. We don't know how healthy he's
going to be. I would cheer that. You want to make me cheer? I'll cheer that.
Again, there's opportunity. They play Vancouver, whenever you're listening to this. Could be today, could be tomorrow. And
I think it's tomorrow. I don't think there's any games today.
There is no games today. I'm talking about when are they listening to this show? There are no games tonight. Thanks, Bet. Then I have to watch the NLCS now. I'm actually interested in that. In terms of there is positives. The fact that they've gotten 40 plus shots in the first two games. The first game that was a lot of power play. The second game they had 2 power plays.
I didn't like a lot of their shot selection. I didn't like that. I liked the possibility. I liked the roster that was on the ice. I liked the enthusiasm from the team. I liked the enthusiasm from some of the fans. That's what I liked. That's what I'm positive. That's what I'm happy about.
Can we talk about specialty teams for a second? We haven't really talked about five forwards because we haven't had a chance.
What were your thoughts on five forwards?
Now, when I see that, I think back to the 90s Penguins, the team the Panthers beat in the playoffs in 96 to get to the Stanley Cup final. It was the last team that really used it. If you're the Panthers, and the margins are so fine in the league where any little decision can either give you an advantage or knock you back, you want to try to take advantage of this. And the Panthers had the dilemma of, well, which of these great five forwards are you going to knock off of the top power play unit because you're going to go with a defenseman, obviously. And then they decided, well, okay, how about let's have Barkov play as the defenseman and the setup man, and let's get all the good forwards out there at once. Now, there are advantages to that. Barkov can quarterback a power play. He's obviously has the vision, he has the drive, but he's actually really good in front of the net too. And when he's quarterbacking the power play as the defenseman in air quotes, he can't do that. And when there is a defenseman on the power play, Barkov could get in front of the net and get into those decent positions. And I think that that's something that you lose with that unit. Now, obviously, with this power play with Trocheck and Hoffman, you have two shoot-first players, and everybody else is pretty good in terms of passing. I think defensively, as you saw, as they've given up two shorthanded goals, there are issues, and I think teams are going to try to exploit that. But I like loading up on all the forwards because it builds on the strengths, and I think it can work. It just needs to be worked on a lot more. It's not anywhere near the finished article yet. When they brought it out, I was like, okay, this is cool. I like this idea because we saw last year when they tweaked the power play and it worked a lot better, but it took a while to get into gear, right? It's going to take a little bit of time. Now, I think they still have to have a power play in which they use the defenseman because when you're giving up shorthanded goals like that, especially in the third period against Tampa, it's a risk, and it's something that could be...
The Trocheck hesitated. He stood there flat-footed in Tampa. He didn't go at the guy with the puck in the corner. He didn't back up to ride coverage. He stood there. In that period, even with the defenseman on the ice, Trocheck's on the ice in that spot making that decision. Barkov played that 2-on-1 better than Keith Yandle, who, let's be honest, would be the D out there.
This is true. He would have been the D.
Played it way better. Could he predict that Reimer was going to bite on that fake so much? And then, no, he couldn't. Would he predict that Huberto was going to back check the wrong way? Thanks, Huberto. No, he couldn't. Was Huberto not going to be on that power play? Apparently, that's the de facto choice, which I don't understand. Let's get Mike Hoffman, who's done nothing for the power play, 100% on power play one, no matter what. But Jonathan Huberto, they went back to power play one today, Huberto on power play two. It's Huberto's, that's the forward they kick off, which is fine. I'm okay with kicking off better forwards to make decisions that benefit the unit, but the unit isn't benefited by it. I think what they should do is run five forwards on the first unit, have Bukestad be the guy in net, because I don't want Barkov in front of the net getting his hand broken again, blocking a shot that he's trying to tip or whatever, or getting hacked or cross-checked in the back for a minute and a half standing in front of the net. That's such a waste of his skills. Get him the puck as much as possible. Quarterback does that. Put Bukestad in front of the net. He's better at it anyway. Or if you're going to use a defenseman, Ekblad, the guy who's one of the best goal scorers on defense in the league. Why isn't he the cannon guy from up top?
I think that there are ways that they can tweak.
The problem isn't that they chose five forwards. I love that. That was the closest thing to experimenting they did. It's that they chose five forwards, they picked the five forwards, and then they just would not move off it. They didn't try new breakouts. They didn't try different rotations to get more movement out of it. They didn't try different set of five forwards. They didn't even try to bring in Ekblad or Yandle for just a little bit, in a mid shift to see how that would work. They didn't try anything. They try a kernel of an idea, and then they just sit there and they don't do anything because they're scared. They're coaching scared. And I understand. I'm with you. I don't want them to change the five power play unit because that's coaching scared so early in the season. That's being so overly cautious so early in the season.
I want them to make some tweaks as time goes on. I think that obviously you need to work on it more, but yeah, don't change it. I mean, keep trying. Well,
don't
it.
Abandon it outright. Like the
no,
like
if, I don't think they're going to. And I don't think they're. Going
I don't
to.
Think they're going to either. But there's people who want them to do that, and you know, I want them to be trying everything because the thing is, nothing's working. They're 0-1-1. They have one
and
point.
Let's be honest.
They should have 4 points. They should have 4 points. They should have won.
If it wasn't
both
for goaltending, they'd probably have 4 points.
I mean, you it, yes.
Maybe not against the Lightning, but they would have won that last night if Belongo played. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I believe so. I believe so, too.
They had a good enough... I mean, here's where my concern...
But there's
is.
Also other breakdowns. So it's not
are.
Just goaltending.
No, it isn't. But goaltending was the biggest of them last
yes.
night.
I mean, here's, I would say maybe the, both games. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it was as bad in the first game as it was in the second. But obviously. Here's where I think my biggest concern comes in. Again, it's two games. They played the fewest games in the league. They're going to play the fewest games in the league, I think, in the month of October. Yes. My biggest concern is not that they've had their breakdowns. It's that they've had these periods, as we talked about at the start of the show, in which they decided, we're going to completely dominate you. And maybe it's just the top line, but they were able to roll four lines. And we're not talking, okay, they had a better period, clearly, than the other team, and they tilted the ice. It's complete, utter domination. Like, no Panthers team I've ever seen has ever had periods like this in two consecutive games where they just decided the other team's going to have nothing. And the first period against the Lightning, the Lightning had nothing. And the Lightning could be the best team in hockey. And Columbus is a playoff team from last year. And I was looking at some of the tweets I saw from some Columbus guys, and they were like, hey, Blue Jackets, what are you doing during the second period when the Panthers just completely flipped the ice? And it was rolling four lines. Yes, it's mostly Barkov, Bjugstad, and Dadonoff right now because they have the most chemistry. But everybody was playing into it, and that's what the Panthers in an ideal world would look like 70% of the time. And do I think they could get there? I think they could absolutely get there. But it's a matter now of can they find a way to get that consistency. This team, last year until the end of the year, wasn't really consistent, and that was a huge problem. The fact that they have this in their game now, and the fact that they can get into a period and just turn the switch, and that's it for the other team, is really good. Obviously, some of that's personnel. But that's also maximizing what they do really well as a team. But now it's just a matter of chaining it together and doing more of it. And they're not there yet, but I would like to see what happens against Vancouver, for instance. Now, the Canucks have played decently in the first couple games, and Elias Pettersson's a lot of fun. I mean, I remember watching the first game and going, holy crap, that shot is insane. I know you're liking this because he's Swedish, but...
Another Y hockey favorite.
I know, and they were talking about 31 Thoughts, what team had them number one on their draft boards. Love to kill to hear that. It wasn't the Panthers, because we know they don't like Swedes. But here's the thing about that game. Vancouver is nowhere near as good of a team as Tampa and Columbus is. So how do the Panthers play against a team that is way below the level of the first two teams that they played, right? That's what I'm really curious about. Like, they never beat the Blue Jackets, and games against Tampa are always stupid, right? But the Panthers played the Lightning pretty much dead even in terms of all of the important things. But the Lightning often have these games where they don't play at their best because they decided they're going to take the night off. And they decided that they could flip a switch and they didn't flip the switch. Now they're playing against the Canucks. And the Canucks in a couple of their games looked grossly bad. Like, they were really, really bad against Carolina. And Carolina's looked pretty good the first couple of games. They stifled the Lightning a couple nights ago. And that was because Anders Nielsen had a crazy good game. Supporting the LGBT community and doing that. Good stuff, hockey. Now, how do the Panthers look against the Canucks? Like, how do they look against bad teams is my curiosity, because the Flyers are not a bad team. The Capitals obviously aren't a bad team. The Red Wings are, and then they play the Rangers, who stink, the Islanders, who stink, and the Devils, who are a team the Panthers should be better than. How do they look against bad teams is my curiosity right now, right? Because we've already seen that they can go toe-to-toe with really good teams and stay into these hockey games, right? Because every team's going to have duds, but the Panthers prove that they can skate with anybody at this point. Now it's what happens against bad teams? Do they go out and do they dominate bad teams? I want to see if they can dominate the Canucks. I want to see if they can put the Canucks to the sword early and they can chain together more of that first period against the Lightning, second period against Columbus, where they just totally dominated. I want to see if they can do that. I think they can. And I think that they're going to be more likely to have their way against the Canucks because, well, they're bad. Even in spite of how they looked to start the season. Last year, they looked pretty good to start the season and fell off a cliff. How is it going to go on this game tonight, I'm curious to see how that plays out. And I want to see how they play against bad teams because we haven't seen it yet. But, I mean, there are obviously negatives, but every team's had negatives thus far to start the year. The positives are, it shows you how good this team could be. It's tantalizing how good this team could be. Like, everybody looks at the Leafs and seeing how they're scoring a billion goals and how they can't defend at this point. And I'm like, well, the Panthers are kind of, they've played two games, but they've kind of looked the same way. They've had these tantalizing moments of holy crap. And then they've had these moments of Jesus, what are you doing? And that's every team, I think, in the league at this point. But it's a matter of how many holy crap moments can the Panthers put together? Because we know how good this team could be. We've already seen it. We have the evidence in front of us. They've played six periods of hockey. I don't count overtime. And two of them were complete total domination. That's a third of their season. Imagine if it's 50% of their season where they look like that. They're not worrying about making the playoffs. They're worrying about can they beat Toronto, Tampa, or Boston. That's what I'm really interested to see if they can put more of that together. And the shame is we know they can do it. It's just a matter of whether they have the capability of doing it, whether it's on the players or the coaches or what have you.
I agree. I think that they just need to find the efficiencies or the inefficiencies to get that extra third. Because, you know, it's a third of the season is games that they're going to win and games they're going to lose. Can't control. And then a third of the season
are going to be puck bounce games, like we saw with the Lightning and the Blue Jackets,
and
which were puck bounce.
The next third is what do you do with that last third? What do you do with that middle? And what are you willing to do to get there? Are you willing to make sure the team comes out on fire against Vancouver, pops in three or four, and
that's,
you know,
the end
in
of that.
The third period, you can start swapping some D pairs, swapping some four lines, and seeing how it works. Or, you know, can you experiment the whole game and still win? Can you put these? I mean, you just got to start making more of what you have, because if there's anything it's Florida's really good at, it's wasting opportunity, it's wasting time, and it's wasting value. So they need to find the best way to get more out of it.
I completely agree with you, and that's the thing. Like, they haven't played a poor game. They've had poor moments in the first two games, but they haven't played a bad game, you know? And I would say last year to start the season, I think they had 2 points, and this year they have one. So it's not all that different, and that was a home-and-home against the Lightning. They've had their poor moments, but they've not played badly. Like, they've had moments where you're like, what are you doing? But then they've had the holy crap moments too, right? You know, like, we've reached a point where Troy Brouwer looks like a reasonable NHLer at this point in his career, I don't think that's as much him as much as it is the Panthers looking pretty decent. And we've already seen players like Jacob McDonald, Lamico, who I've been calling Lamico for all this time, and I'm sorry about that. I'm usually a stickler on pronunciations. I didn't get that right, but he's looked good. You've already seen players step up, and you know you have a top line that can run with anybody in the league. Right now, I mean, other people would take other top lines because we watch the Panthers more than any other team. Like, Bukestad, Barkov, and Dadonov is one of the best lines in hockey. Right now, I would say it's one of the top five lines in hockey. And it's just so good when it's at its game. And we saw that. It's just a matter of getting everybody else on that level. And there's a lot to build on. There's a lot to improve. But I think the good news is that they've only played two games. And they don't play the meat of their schedule until really November. And the other thing I want to see Michael Hutchinson play. I would like to see him play against the Canucks because you can afford to take risks against a team that's not very good. He won't play unless Reimer stinks it up again, which is always possible. But I want to see how Hutchinson plays because when he played in the preseason, he looked pretty solid. He looked okay.
He's got as much of a chance as Reimer.
This is absolutely correct.
As far as I'm concerned. Okay. I mean, the thing with Reimer, and I was back and forth on Twitter today about it, so you can go read there if you want, but is you can look at his stats, you can see that, oh, you know, in some runs he's done well, he has a good amount of athleticism, he's a nice guy and everything, he should be capable to string along some wins. But the problem is the way he plays. He's an adventurer in net. He creates havoc, chaos. He's bad on rebound control. He doesn't stop plays and cover pucks as much, and create that, you know, relieve tension, relieve stress in the D zone. He makes his D work a lot harder because he can't handle the puck well. And when he does handle the puck, it sometimes makes it even worse. Even just as far as like the pucks rolling for D instead of just flat if the D just went and got it themselves. Little things like that. And then, you know, you can look at all of last year and pretty much all of Reimer's time with Florida and with other teams, the teams don't play well in front of him. Whether it's they don't trust him or the way he plays just makes them play a different and worse style of hockey, it just doesn't work out.
This is something that you mentioned. This is something that we mentioned. It's not even that he does. He is more of an adventurer. And when the Panthers play with Luongo, they just look better because they think they could say, okay, we could take risks because we know Lou might make a great save at the other end.
Right.
That's just how it is.
Your team's always going to play better with your starter, and we get that. But it's that you don't want the team to completely change the way they play, completely crumble when the backup goes in net, especially if this backup is a guy who's backing up the 40-year-old Luongo, who's already hurt, and the plan
thankfully,
was for Luongo
was
to play 50-some games?
I said 50.
Yeah, like, hilarious. I called bullshit on that right away. Like, come on, it's not happening.
I think it's still somewhat realistic, but
no,
not...
I mean, come on. Like, he got hurt twice in the first game. And it weren't even like his fault. There's people falling on him. He's just going to keep getting hurt every couple games. And sometimes he can play through and sometimes he can't. But you can't let Reimer be the guy. He's just not. He can play 20 games in the NHL in a year. And like still, I'm unsure about it. But hey, the stats say it's okay, whatever. That's fine.
Did you also hear last night in the broadcast they were talking about this made me laugh a little bit, and I hate saying this, but it did. They were talking in the third period. I think Troy Brower just kicked a puck out of the zone, and they were talking about they have analytics on how many people win one-on-one battles, like along the boards. I'm like, okay, all right, sounds interesting enough. I'd like to see the data on that, but hey, if they have it, but
I'd be interested in all of that. I mean,
I'd be interested in seeing it too.
Yeah, I mean, because
especially because their system is so predicated on winning board battles and getting the puck out to the forward at the blue line up the boards, so. I mean, I'm interested in seeing some of that, but the point I think we're both making is there's positives, there's negatives, every team has that, and if they can build on their positives, we already know how good this team can be.
The positives are the positives we knew about before the season.
So there's
minus
no surprise.
Jacob McDonald.
Minus, and Lamico, I guess, in some ways, because he played really well.
I'll still say I knew about that before the season. I was calling for him to be up last year.
Of course you would say that, but I mean, I did not expect Lamico to be the fourth line center at some point. And now the ideal version of the Panthers is going to have him in the 12 that plays, obviously. Whether he's a winger,
he's a pretty decent fourth line center.
He's
making it hard, and you can tell he's the type of guy that Bob Bugner will, you know, make allowances for. Like, this isn't Owen Tippett, who, you know, has to work so much harder than a guy who's going to block shots, make big hits on defenders going back to get the puck, change early on a shift, be okay with not playing for 5 minutes, you know, like that kind of stuff. Like, he's just more, like, this is a guy that Bob Bugner is going to be more willing to play. So I guess that's maybe why I'm not surprised, because he fits more of that bottom six Bob Bugner role.
But he's better at it.
Yeah, but he's like actually efficient at it. He does it well, and he has enough hands. He has and like, let's be honest, that smile, like with him and his missing teeth and how goofy he is, like that's the best part of some of the hockey games. Is just if he, like when he was on the ice when Brower scored and seeing that smile, oh, man.
Did you see Jacob McDonald's reaction when he scored? He's like, "Holy crap! Did that just happen?"
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It was really funny. I looked at it. Watching the highlight, I'm like, he could not believe that just happened. Because that
the
was
Panthers,
like, what, the second
the Panthers, shift? Panthers players are really good at scoring in their first game, or like doing something really good, like when they get called up. And then the Flyers have a habit, they're really good at giving up someone's first NHL goal. That's what the...
Yes. Brady Tkachuk,
yes.
For instance.
Oh,
Brady
man.
Tkachuk, for instance.
Someone just
okay.
needs to pop him. Where's Max Domi when you need him?
Okay, can we talk about a couple of things that we should mention firstly before we get to grading?
Vegas isn't good.
Vegas is regressing to the mean, yes. That was not a surprise. Can we also say about the Leafs? I was watching SportsCenter last night with Scott Van Pelt, he a Terp, and they were talking about the Leafs being the Warriors of hockey. Can we not do this right now, please? Can we not talk about them being the Warriors of hockey? Have you noticed the Warriors also play defense at times, which they didn't, which the Leafs have not yet done?
Well, the Leafs, I mean, the Warriors win playoff series. I mean, that would be like saying, well, the Panthers are like the, you know,
Minnesota Timberwolves, minus Jimmy Butler. Actually, that would be more the Blue Jackets, because of Sammy Panarin.
Yeah, but I mean, like, yeah, it's just... It's the same thing with everybody saying, oh my God, McDavid's the fastest man on the earth, when he, like, blows past a pivoting Chara and scores a goal. Like, come on. Like, dude had, like, a head burst of speed, was at top gear. Chara's pivoting, like, twice, is 40, and is one of the slowest people in the entire effing league.
Like, yeah, let's not go for that.
It's people, like, it's, you know, everything gets magnetized, and, you know, especially Matthews is really good, but I remember Matthews blowing up and scoring 4 goals in his first game, and, like, every year he starts the year on fire, and, you know, goal scorers score in bunches, and right now they're playing a lot. Like, they're playing every other night, so when you're hot, you get to stay hot. And, like, you know, that's good for him. He's playing with freaking John Tavares. They're pumped. They have this newfound chemistry. Like,
the Panthers right now, in terms of puck possession through 2 games, are at 10th in the league. Do you know who's 3rd in the league right now? Just to give you an idea how puck possession stats be nothing at this early point in the season.
Do you know who's 3rd? Vancouver Canucks or the Coyotes?
No, Arizona's 5th. Vegas is 4th with 2 points from 5 games. Do you know who's 3rd?
Buffalo.
Your New Jersey Devils. It's funny.
That's funny. Rasmus Dahlin is, like, better than 6 Ekblads combined. He's sick.
That's not a surprise.
This is just, like, I know Pettersson is, like, is the easier pick for Calder and everything.
You know who I picked for Calder this year?
Dahlin, because, I mean, Rasmus
Dahlin. Oh, I didn't. Andrei Svechnikov.
I mean, yeah, he's really good and everything, but this guy really good would be the number one defender on at least half the NHL teams. And at 18, while being, and that's not even including the offense. That's literally just with him putting up 0 points all year. He'd be a first pair defender on most teams.
We all knew he was great, and I'm happy Buffalo finally has that player on the back end. They deserve it.
I know. I just was talking about people tooting their own horn and magnetizing things, but, you know, this isn't just somebody being really fast or something. This guy has a complete tool set, and it's not natural for a defenseman at 18 to have this type of tool set in the first couple games playing in North America. So
he's really good. Pettersson, I can't wait to watch him play for an actual 60 minutes or whenever he gets on, because he looked really good the first couple of games. And Vancouver, some of them started to bring up the Gretzky name, which was a mistake. Shouldn't do that. So that's interesting. Can we talk about the Borgstrom thing, because that was a while ago and I had arguments about it on Twitter and how I was not really pleased that he was sent down. And I don't want to spend too much time on it because it's in the past. We could actually talk about hockey, which we've done. It was still a bad decision, and the reasoning for it wasn't very good. And it was very polarizing amongst the Panthers fans on Twitter that I talked to or that I saw. There were some not great opinions on that. I mean, I hope that Borgstrom eventually – he's going to play in the NHL this year. And at some point, you think ideally – not saying anything bad about Dennis Mulligan, but ideally, wouldn't you want Huberto and Trocheck to be playing with him? I think the answer to that's yes. And I don't know whether he gets that necessarily playing at Springfield. I have not checked a lot of what's been going on with the Thunderbirds. I know they lost their first game in overtime. You pay more attention to that than I do.
They play today against the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, which is a very good team. Yes. So this could be a big challenge. So I'm not looking for a W today. I'm literally just looking to see the lines. Who's in the lineup? Who's playing where?
How did it look in the first game?
Kinnear's back on his bullshit. I mean...
Of course.
Obviously, they had, like, you know...
Was Harry Zolderchuk on the first line?
Yes.
Oh, damn it. I said that in jest, and then it actually happened in real life.
It was Harry Zolderchuk, Captain Paul Thompson and Dryden Hunt for the first line. And, you know, like the D pairs, like it's just like every line has to have an anchor and a prospect. Every pairing has to have an anchor and a prospect. That's just how Kinnear coaches. Like, it's terrible. And they just, it's the worst of Gallant, it's the worst of Rowe, and it's the worst of Bugner all in one coach. That's Greg Kinnear.
Jordy Kinnear.
No, he's Greg Kinnear. I want to talk about Greg Kinnear more than I want to talk about Gordy, Gordy, Jordy, Bordy.
Oh no! Oh,
remember,
no.
he was considered a heavy internal favorite for the fucking head coaching job in Florida after his first ever head coaching season. Jesus, this franchise. But you know, the thing is, Borgstrom had the flu the first game. Now, I don't know if he did or didn't or whatever, but I wasn't upset that Borgstrom didn't play. I wasn't upset Borgstrom got sent down. I was more upset that Haley and McKenzie were on the lineup. I was more upset that Brower was on the lineup, in the lineup, to be honest with you.
Well, the good news is that it's Brower hasn't been nearly as bad.
Borgstrom
but it
needs
was
to be
was a...
first line, and he needs to have two wingers who are legit NHL prospects.
So what would the line be for you in Springfield that you'd like to see Borgstrom play? Ideally.
They have so many vets and everything. I have to see what's even realistic. Because the thing is, you know, there's AHL rules. You have to play a certain amount of so-and-so. And, you know, it's not super easy to make it all work, but you can make it work. Borgstrom... let's see. I'll just list the people who can't play with Borgstrom. Blaine Byron, Jace Howerlock, Harry Zolnerchuk, Joe Lawley, Paul Thompson, Jake Horton, Adam Gilmore, Bobby Farnham, Tony Turgeon.
That's a lot of names.
So, like, Patrick Bykoff can play with him, Sebastian Repo can play with him, Dryden Hunt can play with him, Anthony Greco can play with him, Jonathan Ang can play with him. That's it. Because he has to be the first line player. How many forwards can play on the first line? Let's be honest.
This is what we
should
be
four.
This is
it should be four or five guys that they can choose from to play on the first line on the wings, and those are your guys right there.
Yes, this is what we talked about when I said is going down really good because the Thunderbirds kind of stink.
They do.
Like,
stink.
I don't know how many people. I don't know how many people.
They're better this year. They're a lot better. But like they lost Curtis Volk. And who else did they lose? They lost the two biggest point getters from last year.
Yeah, I wrote that in at the Rat Trick, where you can see some of my Panthers musings, where I wrote about how the Borgstrom decision was a terrible one, and it was along the lines of, well, firstly, the Thunderbirds aren't very good, and it's not like this is a prospect factory like the Marlies. Like, if the Panthers ran an organization like the Leafs run the Marlies. This is not because we know somebody who runs the Marlies. It's just because they won the Calder Cup and they're really good.
Yeah, I mean, you could put the Syracuse Crunch in there, too.
The Crunch are in there. I mean, Milwaukee.
Hershey.
To a lesser extent. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Lehigh Valley, too. What's going on with Hextall and the way
Like, 5 years, yeah. I mean,
like, this is the thing. Like, we're not talking about
Rochester Americans used to have a...
Not when the Panthers ran the Americans.
No. But I think when... They had like a 5-8 year stretch where they had, you know, a lot of good guys.
This is the thing. You hope he's playing the minutes that he needs to play and getting those quality minutes. I can't definitely say that he's going to.
Can Ian McCosian not play with Matt Mangreen? Like Jean or whatever?
He's listed as a forward on Wikipedia.
Well, he plays both. I mean, that's the problem with the Springfield. They have defensemen who play forward and forwards who play deep. Like, it's so fucking stupid. They're not, like, it's not like that one guy that the Capitals took in the draft, like, 3 years ago that was, like, really good and played forward and D and could do it, you know, at a level where it's like, oh, he could play forward or D in the NHL one day. These are guys who, like, moved from forward to D in the NCAA because they weren't good enough to get games at the Division One level. So they became scratches and practice players who had to just fill in the empty spots on the team and learn the new position. And then, you know, so they're bigs or they fight or they do something, so they get a pro contract. And then cheap AHL teams who need to just fill spots sign them after those those spots get taken, and they end up on Springfield for 3 years, and that's what happens.
So who's going to be the All-Star when Springfield hosts the All-Star game in January for the Thunderbirds?
I honestly think that is a big reason why Borgstrom's down there, because they're hosting the All-Star game and they're going to have no fucking representative. I think Borgstrom's going to be down there more than he's going to play in the NHL. Yes.
Because of the All-Star game? I wish it was
for 10-15 games. No. I just think that that's what – this wasn't about a quick – turnaround. This wasn't about letting him get kickstarted in the NHL for 10 or 12 games, which I, again, no problem with. Let him get started down there, call him up, and when he's
getting the first call up when something goes wrong, obviously.
Yeah, that's like, I'm fine with that and everything, but like, you know, I think this is going to be a full year thing for them, and or at least that's what I'm reading between the lines of what they're saying, and it doesn't sound like he's coming up. Like, this is like a 10-15 games, and then we're planning on already calling him back up. This is not what it sounds like whatsoever. This is, he's down on the AHL team, and it's up to him to change our minds, blah, blah, blah. And we're not planning on it for the rest of the year.
That's what I was saying. Like, when I talked about decisions and how every decision matters in the NHL because the margins are so tight between teams right now, decisions like that cost you. And I don't care whether he's developing or not. Is he one of the Panthers' 12 best forwards right now? The answer is still yes. So that's where the decision-making process comes in, and the Panthers have screwed it up millions of times. And that was the same thing with Borgstrom. And, again, I think he's going to come up at some point. Logic dictates that he will, but I hope it is – like, he could get kickstarted and he forces the Panthers to call him up. But who knows whether that's possible, because in Springfield he could be playing with Harry frickin' Zolnerchuk, which would be terrible, and that seems like inevitable that he's going to. Which is, unfortunately, life.
Well, yeah, I mean, the way I'm thinking is there's going to be a prospect first line. I mean, this is ideally how I'm hoping it's run, because I just know it's going to be this way. A prospect first line, so like Borgstrom,
Ang and Repo or something like that.
Yeah, or Bykov and Hunt or, you know, whatever. And then a vet first line. Thompson, Zolnerchuk, and, you know, like Jake Horton or something. Which is an AHL career grinder line. And they're going to play a bunch of minutes and do a bunch of, you know, captain-y defensive stuff. And then you'll have a prospect third line that gets soft offensive minutes. You know,
featuring everybody else.
Ang, centered by Jonathan Ang, and you get somebody else. And then you'll have your Hauerluck and your leftovers, the guys who on your fourth line. Hopefully Farnham.
Hopefully Farnham,
but I mean,
yes.
Like, also, I think it's time that it's officially Jace Hauerluck is no longer a Florida Panthers prospect. He's just not. It's not his fault. I just think that between the injuries, transitioning out of the WHL, being sent to the ECHL, the bad development in Springfield, and the Panthers having a lot of good drafts and targeting guys in his age range in the later rounds and then plugging them straight into the NHL, like Mamin and Repo coming over and taking his spot, it just spells the end of it.
And not every prospect turns out.
And that's fine. You know, that's fine. He can still... like, I think he can still have value in the AHL, and what you want to do is turn him into a really good AHL vet that's better than Paul Thompson, so you don't have to go get these guys. I mean, like, there's still a value in developing him and investing in his career and making sure he's happy as a person and he's doing well and rooting for him. I mean, like, he could still be an NHL call-up, or he could still be a part of a trade. Or
better than Michael Haley.
You know... 100% right there, buddy. And he'll fight just as much to make the team. He'll want to be a part of the team just as much as Michael Haley. He's the guy that made Dale Talon draft him because he wanted to be a Florida Panther. How much do you hear that from hockey players? This guy would become a Michael Haley if you wanted him to, but he'd be way better at hockey.
He would be way better at hockey. This is correct. Also, we need to spend time talking about Gritty. We have to talk about Gritty.
We already did.
Did we? Was that bit recorded?
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Oh, geez.
See, now we can end it full circle. We don't know whether it was recorded or not.
I don't know. Normally, when I record these,
is this just
going to
stop in the middle of a sentence?
Oh, I hate your Sopranos reference right there. I want to say on Gritty, because we're both Philadelphia guys, and the Panthers are playing the Flyers. Well, we're not going to the game this coming week because we can't make that work schedule, but maybe in November we will. I've never seen anything like this with a mascot. It's freaking Gritty, man. Isn't it funny?
He's the best. I mean, I would just – he's killing the memes. I mean,
yes.
The stock photos that he's hiding behind, like all that stuff. His interaction with fans is great. He's body checking people on ice. He's, you know, teasing people. But he's also showing some soft sides, which is nice.
He's like the Philly fanatic, just, only far less annoying.
So, you know, it's the best thing going in Philadelphia Flyers hockey right now. I mean, JVR's out 5 weeks.
That's so sad.
Andy McDonald's playing too much.
Patrick
and he's
got hurt. Nolan Patrick got hurt.
We're not talking about that.
Travis
Konechny's getting kicked by the terrible coach.
See, it's not just the Panthers, everybody. As you see, maybe that means the Panthers will win on Tuesday.
I mean, there's a commonality between both coaches. They were plucked and put into a coaching spot probably before they were 100% ready because the owners liked their character. And they're both really stubborn and refuse to make changes that are obviously better for the team. So there's a lot of commonality there.
There is. But at least Ron Hextall has Carter Hart coming.
That is the cure-all. And good goalies cure everything. And if Dale Talon had Carter Hart instead of Montembeau in the AHL, guess what I would be doing? I would be spending this podcast for the last hour berating the Flyers probably instead, because they wouldn't have an answer to their biggest need.
Well, they also kind of claimed Calvin Pickard, so.
Yeah, I mean, the jury's out on him. There's a lot of people
I feel a little bit dicey saying that, you know, like, could the Panthers have gotten better play from Calvin Pickard or Curtis McElhaney, who are available on waivers, or Michael Hutchinson in this case, and then Reimer? And the answer is, unfortunately, yes.
Yes.
So that's that's my slight concern in that area. But, it's first couple of games. It's not that bad.
I think Calvin Pickard is equal to Hutchinson, so that's why I wouldn't have made the grab. I just would have gotten Hutchinson in the net earlier, but...
We'll see if he plays. But as I said, we hope he does play. But you know what? It's the 25th anniversary logo looks a little bit better on ice when it's not, you know.
I really think they should have a third jersey.
I do too, because look at all the great third jerseys we have.
Well, then Pittsburgh's.
Yes, and then the Penguins. The Hurricanes' third jersey is also not very good, but maybe the Jets' third.
I'll take the Hurricanes' jerseys. I like that the C's on the other side. I always like that, but I'm a Red Wings fan, so.
In that case, you are okay. Let's say this. It's not that bad yet, but there are more games coming up, so. I'm excited to keep on seeing what could be next. If this team plays as well as it could and things go as well as it could, good things could be coming. I'm excited. Again,
yay team.
Yay us. You looked better than Maryland football did last weekend. Congratulations. That's not saying much at all.